It is Sunday, April 26th. I'm Anthony, VK6AXB, and welcome to News West. This weekend is, of course, Anzac Day. There's a number of Anzac-themed pieces in the news this morning. Here's Steve.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with my Anzac edition of Did You Know? Given this is the Anzac Day weekend, I thought I would look at how the military and amateur radio operators have enhanced each other over the course of the 20th century. The relationship between amateur radio and the Australian Defence Force runs far deeper than many people realise. Long before modern digital systems and secure satellite networks, Australia's military communications capability was built, quite literally, on the skills, ingenuity and enthusiasm of civilian radio experimenters. From the earliest days of wireless through to the end of the Second World War, amateur radio operators were not just hobbyists, they were pioneers, problem solvers, and in times of conflict, an essential national resource. In the early 20th century, radio, or wireless, was still an emerging technology. The distinction between professional, engineer, military operator and amateur enthusiast was often blurred. Many of the individuals experimenting with wireless communication in Australia were self-taught amateurs, building their own equipment, stringing antennas between masts or trees, and pushing the limits of what was possible. At this stage, Australia's naval and military forces had only begun to recognise the potential of wireless communication. As a result, they drew heavily on the same small pool of technically skilled individuals who were active in the amateur community. In effect, the earliest military wireless capability in Australia was shaped by the same people who were experimenting in sheds and backyards. With the outbreak of World War I, governments moved quickly to control the airwaves. Amateur radio transmissions were largely banned due to concerns about interference and espionage. However, this restriction did not diminish the value of amateur operators. In fact, it highlighted it. Many amateur radio enthusiasts were recruited into military service, particularly in signals units. Their practical experience gave them a significant advantage. They already understood how to tune equipment, troubleshoot faults, and operate under less than ideal conditions. These were critical skills at a time when radio technology was still unreliable and highly sensitive to environmental factors. In Australia, members of the Australian Flying Corps, Army Signals Units and Naval Communications Branches often included individuals with amateur radio backgrounds. The hobby had effectively become an informal training ground for wartime communications personnel. Following World War I, amateur radio was reintroduced and quickly grew in popularity. The establishment and expansion of the Wireless Institute of Australia helped formalise licensing and encourage technical development amongst operators. During this interwar period, amateur radio operators made significant contributions to the understanding of high-frequency propagation, the ability of radio signals to travel long distances by reflecting off the ionosphere. These discoveries were not just of academic interest, they laid the groundwork for global communication systems. For defence planners, this growing body of knowledge was invaluable. Amateur operators were effectively acting as a distributed research and development network, experimenting with antennas, frequencies and transmission techniques. While informal, this community provided insights that would later underpin military communication strategies. It was also an unspoken understanding. In the event of another conflict, these skilled individuals could once again be called upon. Amateur radio operators were, in many ways, a civilian reserve of communications expertise. The outbreak of World War II marked the strongest and most direct connection between amateur radio and the Australian Defence Forces. As in the previous war, amateur transmissions were suspended and equipment was often registered or confiscated, but the operators themselves were in high demand. Thousands of Australians with amateur radio experience joined the Australian Army Signals Corps, Royal Australian Navy Communications Branches and the Royal Australian Air Force Radio Services. Their ability to operate, repair and adapt radio equipment made them invaluable in both field and operational settings. Amateur operators were particularly well suited to signals intelligence or SIGINT roles. Their experience in listening to faint and distant signals translated directly into work at interception stations where they monitored enemy transmissions. In Australia, these activities contributed to organisations that would later evolve into the Australian Signals Directorate, or ASD. Tasks included intercepting and analysing enemy radio traffic, direction finding, and supporting early cryptographic efforts. The keen ears and technical instincts of amateur operators played a quiet but vital role in these efforts. Wartime conditions demanded adaptability, and amateur operators delivered. Many were involved in developing or refining portable radio systems, improving antenna designs for field use, and experimenting with frequencies to maintain communication under challenging conditions. These innovations often drew directly from pre-war amateur experimentation, demonstrating how the hobby had contributed to practical military capability. With the end of World War II, amateur radio activity resumed, and many returning servicemen brought with them enhanced technical skills and experience. This created a strong overlap between former military communications personnel and the amateur radio community. During the 50s and 60s, amateur radio became more technically advanced, military-trained operators enriched the hobby with new knowledge, and the cultural connection between defence communications and amateur radio remained strong. Although military systems were becoming more specialised and secure, amateur radio was still widely seen as an invaluable background for those interested in communications roles. Before 1970, amateur radio was far more than a pastime. It served as a training ground for comms personnel, a source of innovation in radio technology, and a strategic reserve of skilled operators in times of war. In many respects, Australia's early defence communications capability was built on the foundations laid by amateur radio enthusiasts. Nowadays, it's much harder to see the relevance of our hobby to both defence and public safety network operations and maintenance, but it is still there. During the early noughties, HF communications largely gave way to satellite-based comms, providing clearer, more reliable communications with higher data transfer rates. Into today's age, though, where satellites can be easily removed from ship and ground-based missile systems, the relevance of HF has enjoyed a renaissance, and in defence at the start of, and the start of one for, again, in public safety. The only sector that maintained its skills in all things HF was the amateur sector, and my gut feeling is that relevance will return. Well, thanks for listening, and I hope we all enjoy the long weekend whilst reserving some time to remember both those that made the ultimate sacrifice and those that signed up to commit to the same if asked. I am Steve, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know?
Many listeners would know of Phil Harmon, VK6 Papa Hotel, previously VK6 APH and Golf 3 WXO, for his decades of work at the cutting edge of software-defined radio and other digital communications techniques. Very sadly, Phil became Silent Key not so long ago, but his work continues to receive accolades. Last week, during the AGM of the Radio Society of Great Britain, it was announced that Phil had been awarded the Courtenay Prize Trophy. This trophy is awarded by the RSGB for the most outstanding published technical contribution to amateur radio. Phil received the trophy for his article in the October 2025 edition of the RSGB's Radcom magazine, entitled Alternative Architecture for Software-Defined Radios, referencing Phil's latest work on direct Fourier conversion techniques. This is another worthy accolade for a truly exceptional amateur, who is very sadly no longer around to receive our congratulations in person, but who's left a huge legacy for us to build on. Once again, we remember Phil Harmon, VK6 Papa Hotel, Silent Key.
NewsWest, VK6 ARN, across Western Australia.
When the playing of the bugle sent a shiver down my spine, when I felt a sense of duty and stepped up to join the line. A song was sung, my heart was young, the ship had sailed away, when I saw my mother crying, but I had no words to say. When I wore my country's coat of arms to pledge a solemn vow, I didn't think they'd honour me 100 years from now. When I landed in an ambush on that distant foreign shore, when I saw the bullets flying, I heard the cannon roar, I turned my head, my friend lay dead. It happened so damn fast. When I made it through the mayhem of that terrifying blast, when I managed to survive that day, still, I don't know how. I didn't think they'd tell the tale 100 years from now. When the battle raged forever and adversity was rife, when the courage and the sacrifice were daily facts of life, as darkness fell, it seemed like hell, but mateship got us through. When nothing else made any sense, that's the flag we flew. When thoughts of home revived my strength and wiped my bloody brow, I didn't think they'd call me brave 100 years from now. When I felt a chill that morning, when my heart beat like a drum, when the captain gave his orders and I knew the time had come, no glory there, just pure despair. My best is what I gave. When they wrote, lest we forget, upon the headstone of my grave. When beside my cross the children of the future stop to bow, my spirit will remain alive 100 years from now. When the playing of the bugle sends a shiver down your spine, when you realise your qualities are just the same as mine, from dreamtime land to coastal sand, the city to the sprawl, when the essence of my legacy unites Australians all, when Anzac legend shines a light on all who make that vow, with pride, the world will know their name 100 years from now. Their courage will be just the same 100 years from now.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. The other day I was playing around with RDS, or Radio Data System. It's a digital signal that's often embedded in a commercial broadcast FM transmission. Among other things, it contains information about the station, its content, frequencies, and potentially other useful information, such as traffic alerts. If you recall, I've been working on 50 things to do with a software-defined radio, and decoding RDS is one of those things. The decoding effort aside, I imagined a screen where you could see the RDS information in real time as it was being transmitted by all the local FM broadcast stations. You'd see what music each station was playing, what their local clock thought the time was, how much they transmit other data, and what they might do for emergencies, like, say, a tropical cyclone heading this way. It occurred to me that this would be an example of a fundamental difference between a traditional radio and a software-defined radio, or SDR. Specifically, we are taught that you tune a radio to a frequency, it demodulates or decodes what's there and plays the sound or digital information or whatever is being transmitted on that frequency. If you want to hear something else, you need to change frequency and the radio decodes that new frequency. If you have multiple channels to choose from, there are ways to automatically switch frequency, one after the other. One of my friends recently discovered an old scanner in a box, and according to the specifications, it can scan 20 stations per second. If all 1,000 stations are programmed, it takes 50 seconds to scan them all. A lot can happen in that time. The traditional solution is having more radios. Ideally, you'd have one for every frequency you care about. Cost aside, logistically this is not fun. Imagine having to power 1,000 radios, or find the one where the volume isn't right, or even find space for them, or antennas. In the SDR world, that's not quite how it works. Instead of tuning to one frequency, you essentially tune to a range of frequencies and then, using software, decode one or more of those frequencies at the same time. Listening to multiple broadcast FM stations like that might not make a whole lot of sense, but what about decoding RDS, or listening to aviation frequencies, or local amateur radio repeaters, or multiple digital modes? While that might sound far-fetched, a $50 RTL SDR dongle can manage 2.5 MHz of bandwidth over USB. By comparison, my $1,000 Yaesu FT857D can receive all of 200 kHz in wideband FM mode, and only whilst tuned to the broadcast band frequencies. In normal AM or FM mode, it's 10 kHz, so you'd need 250 of them to listen to the same frequency range. Again, just so we're clear, in analog radio, you need to change frequency to decode a different signal. In SDR, you can simultaneously decode as many signals as resources permit. For example, I can make a simple GNU radio flow graph, a little program that accepts a command line setting. In GNU radio, it's called a parameter block, and run it with a frequency I'm interested in. Then I can run another copy of the same program with a different frequency. Rinse and repeat, and I have as many receivers as I need. While we're at it, you don't need to run the same program multiple times. You can run an FM decoder, a RTTY decoder, an AM decoder, all at the same time, as long as the frequencies you're looking at fit inside the bandwidth of the receiver you're playing with. Just so we're clear, this is one receiver, one antenna, one power supply, with as many decoders as resources allow. In other words, these two methods, analog and SDR, are not the same. Am I glossing over things? Sure. With such a wide bandwidth comes susceptibility to interference and signal overload. Also, the RTL-SDR dongle doesn't transmit. Although in 2014, ISMO Oscar Hotel 2 Foxtrot Tango Golf managed to change the center frequency of his dongle 300 times per second, causing the onboard oscillator to leak in a controlled manner, making a frequency shift keyed or FSK transmission. Yes, I know, that's not quite up to the standard of a transmission coming from an 857D. You'll also need a computer, which you don't need to run an analog radio. Though, truth be told, an analog radio from the last couple of decades is pretty much a computer anyway. You can likely get away with a Raspberry Pi to process the data coming from an RTL-SDR dongle, so another $5, and yes, you'll need a monitor, keyboard, and a power supply. The point I'm making is that these two methods are not the same, and in the evolving world of amateur radio, there's space for both. It also means that once you have this infrastructure, you can start experimenting with new radio technologies and approaches. Will it make my 857D and its siblings obsolete? Perhaps, but I doubt it. There's still plenty of valve radios going around, not to mention the spark gap transmitter at Grimeton in Sweden. In other words, this is growing the hobby, which ultimately is why I'm here. I will mention that it's not all hot cocoa and cookies. I spent the past 2 days attempting to figure out why my very simple AM decoder isn't actually playing back the local ATIS or Automatic Terminal Information Service, and why macOS SDR applications don't include SOAPI SDR support. Because of course they don't. Oh yeah, I'm still trying to get my Proxmox server guest audio to work. I'm sharing this to make sure that you understand that just like creating your own circuit board design and building it, there's plenty of experimentation to be done, problems to solve and challenges to meet. Ultimately, we're playing at the bleeding edge. At least it's not with sharp or hot implements. I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima Alpha Bravo.
This is VK6ARN.
Hello everyone, Anthony here, VK6AXB, with an update from WAG, the West Australian Repeater Group. We've got a few things happening next week, another technical activity session, which is Saturday, May the 2nd, and again we'll be joining in with the VHF group at Wireless Hill. The aim of these sessions is hands-on work, sharing skills and knowledge, plus it's a great social catch-up. And for this one, we'll keep going on the cavity filter sets and also have a bit of other stuff on the go as well. So if you're free on Saturday, May the 2nd, why not come along for a look? Probably from about mid-morning to mid-afternoon, Wireless Hill, Telefunken Drive in Ardross. And we'll be trying to listen on VK6 RFM, 146 950, so if you are coming up, maybe give us a shout. We're still aiming to get back to the Tick Hill repeater site, but the weather and logistics seem to be against us a bit this week. The repaired 23cm repeater has now returned, thanks very much to ICOM, so as soon as we can confirm a date to reinstall at Tick Hill, we'll let everyone know. Monday week, which is May the 4th, is WAG's next meeting, and this one is pretty important. It's our AGM, where we re-elect the committee for another year ahead. Formal advice has been sent out to members, and we look forward to seeing you there, if you can attend. It's at the First Pelican Point Sea Scouts, number 12 Australia 2 Drive in Crawley, with doors open at 7pm for a 7:30pm start. Also, a reminder that WAG's swap meet and junk sale is only a few weeks away now. It's Saturday, June the 13th. The venue is the same as last year, that's the old Midland Mechanics Institute, or the First Midland Scout Hall, which is at number 10 Helen Street in Bellevue. Doors will open at 10am for buyers, sellers from about 9am to set up, gold coin donation for entry, with sellers' tables at no extra cost. So it's a great opportunity to book a table and clear out some surplus from the shack. Please come along, catch up with everyone, and help us raise funds to keep the repeater network on air. And a final reminder that our technical and general net continues on Sunday mornings at 10:30 local on VK6RLM repeater 146.750. Once again, we thank the team at News West for putting this to air, and this has been Anthony, VK6AXB, on behalf of WAG.
You are listening to News West, your weekly news from VK6ARN. If you have any items for the news, the latest they can be submitted is noon Friday. If you have an item you would like read out by the news team, please give plenty of notice to allow someone to record the item before the Friday deadline. This is Darren, VK6EK, for Amateur Radio News, VK6ARN.
Hello and good morning. It's Roy once again, otherwise known as VK6X-ray Victor. And it's Anzac weekend, the 26th of April today. And I have the following items for you on the helpline. I have a whole heap of ICOM service manuals for sale, genuine ICOM factory service manuals, very good condition, copies, $20 each plus post, and most of the ICOM manuals are in genuine factory manuals supplied by ICOM Australia. There's too many numbers there to list, but a couple of them, 745, 740, and there's an ICOM IC40 as well. And there's a whole heap of others as well. Too many to go through, but if you would like a list of them, please email me, vk6xv@bigpond.com. I can send you a copy or put you on the weekly list. Or you can contact Graham Rogers, vk6ro direct. His email address is vk6rottenoranges@hotmail.com. That's Graham, vk6romeooscar@hotmail.com. And also today I have the following, a Time Wave Audio DSP Noise Reduction Unit, $80 for that. There's a Hutrong, not too sure how you say it, Hutrong USDX HF Transceiver, Hutrong US Delta X-ray, US Delta Romeo plus V2 Compound QRP, experimental HF transceiver with inbuilt battery, charger, power supply, and it's a upgraded with an upgraded microphone, a TID radio upgrade microphone, manual and box, $80 for that. It's a DRC SDR receiver. And you may contact Chris for that. Made a bit of a mess of that one, but what the heck. I got it out in the end. Contact Chris, VK6, India Oscar November, on telephone 0404 800 446. Again, that's 0404 800 446. Chris VK6, India Oscar November. It's also 0446 on Oztravel. G'day, Chris. And you notice I didn't say any O's. They're all zeros. I hate people saying O, because that's actually a 6 on their phone. Enough for the lecturing, Roy. Okay. Also have are looking for a HF radio for a new amateur, a cheapie, something up to $500. Anyone with a HF radio, preferably with tuner, or an external tuner maybe, but radio with antenna tuner for up to $500. We're looking for this to get into the into a new operator, a new amateur radio. And you can contact, who can you contact? I don't know. VK6, I've forgotten his call sign. However, you can phone David, VK6, Papa something or other, I've forgotten, on his phone, 0450-031-452. Again, 0450-031-452. If you can help David assist another up-and-coming budding amateur who wants to get on the air with a cheap HF radio of some description. Thank you. Well, that's all I have for you for this morning. Bit of a dog's breakfast this morning. Sorry about that. I promise to do better next time. And I haven't been drinking, but maybe I should. Okay, thank you once again for listening. 73 from Roy, VK6XV. Email address VK6XRayVictor@bigpond.com. Cheers, 73.
And thank you once again, Roy. That brings us to the end of the broadcast for another week. I'd like to thank all of you for listening, and especially thank the broadcasters, relay stations, and everyone who submitted items for the news. We're always looking for more. If you know of something newsworthy, why not record it in MP3, preferably 256kbit mono, or whatever you can manage, and email it to newswest@vk6.net, along with your contact details, in case we need to follow anything up. So, you have either been listening to, or you have just missed, News West. Callbacks will follow on most frequencies, and all being well, we'll do this again next week. Until then, 73 from VK6ARN.